This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, not Jasper, but Leandro Nati Lewis Nyaw, but everybody calls me Unati. And with me today is...
Jeremy Cobb, but Jake Hurwitz calls me Young Cobb.
That is very good.
Young Cobb.
That's giving me Samuel L. Jackson vibes.
And we are not joined today by Jasper Cartwright. He is off exploring Smaug's horde right now, hoping to bring us back the Arkenstone if possible.
Yes, Jamal has demanded it.
Yeah, Jamal has demanded it, and Unati hopes to steal it for her own collection of jewels. But... instead of Jasper William Cartwright, we are joined by a guest, a tremendous guest, a guest who goes by the name of Amy Meester. And Amy Meester is with the group D&D Disability. Yeah, insert applause here. welcome onto the show, Amy. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello, yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Amy and I, we originally met, what was it, like a month and a half ago?
It's been a while now.
2 months ago? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We met doing a panel. It was a diversity panel, which I think is coming out later this month, being the month of May. Hasn't been released yet, but we were both panelists on this diversity panel specifically to do with TTRPGs. And... As soon as you said exactly like the kinds of stuff that you guys do, I was like, ooh, immediately just like, ooh, this sounds really interesting. And I checked out your Twitter and your website and was just like, yo, we gotta have Amy on the show. Why don't you explain for us a little bit, about what D&D Disability does, what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. So D&D Disability, we make supplements for D&D and hopefully soon other TTRPGs that allow you to play disabled characters. Right now we have mechanics for chronic pain. We have mechanics for autism, which I did a lot of the writing for. We have various... NPCs that are disabled that we put out that people can use in their campaigns just to see how those mechanics work in action. Yeah, our goal is to let people be themselves as they play and explore those things through some what I think are pretty interesting mechanics.
110%.
100%.
Like, they were really, really cool. Before we started this, Unati and I were just talking about like, man, these are so cool.
They just make sense. They just make sense.
Right. No, yeah. I'm going to brag a little bit. I do all of the NPCs. I make them and stat them out. I'm pretty proud of how they come out. I think they're pretty cool. I think it's really neat for people to see NPCs that are kind of badass. Oh, am I allowed to?
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, some pretty badass NPCs who are like them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
100%. And we're going to, I think we'll get into the NPCs a little bit more as we go on. But I really wanted to ask, what was your like introduction to the world of nerddom? We kind of ask all of our guests this, like, what is your D&D/TTRPG origin story?
Yeah, let's see. I had played a couple times kind of casually with friends. What really got me into this, it's kind of embarrassing, but I think it's kind of fun, was a breakup. I got broken up with, and in my despair, I went to the public library, as one does, and that day they were having a, like, little nerd convention, and one of the local comic book shops had a table where they were playing Pathfinder, and they were running little, like, 30-minute one-shots for people to kind of let them test it out, and I had nothing better to do, and I was very, very sad, so I jumped in on that, and I was like, oh, I've played this kind of casually a couple times. This is really fun. And then they invited me to come to the shop. And then I got kind of involved with a couple of D&D games there at the shop. And as I played more, I kind of started to get into the online community. And then I started to explore other non-D&D TRPGs. I run my own game now. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just went out from there.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So it was kind of your rebound.
D&D was my rebound, and I think it worked out pretty well. I recommend it.
It's been a much healthier relationship, much more positive one so far.
That's great.
That is awesome. So how then, from there, from initially entering into the world of TTRPGs, did you get involved with D&D Disability?
Yeah, this one's a little bit of a cheat. My roommate is the person who started it. I will take credit because I am the one who got her into D&D. But she was in a game I ran for a little while. I sort of introduced her to it. And then we moved in together and she started talking about this. We're both disabled. She has chronic pain and she was looking at some supplements other people had made, like the combat wheelchair and other super, super cool disability supplements like that, and was like, oh, I can make things that reflect me? That's kind of cool. So it was actually really neat to watch her go from just playing in a game I ran to getting really, really invested in playing and making things that reflected herself. So she sort of founded it, and then I've been helping where it was relevant. We're both autistic, so we did the autism mechanics together. I've kind of helped out with other things. I make the NPCs, but yeah, that one kind of just literally was in my living room at this point.
Oh, wow.
That's really great.
That's so cool.
Like, I guess, I mean, obviously it sounds like it's come from like a real like place of love and investment, but in terms of like your interaction with the game, just in general, what did you think were like some of the pitfalls that kind of exist, and where do you think you've kind of filled in some of those gaps?
Great, yeah. So honestly, I think D&D is something that lends itself really well to, I mean, obviously homebrewing is such a big thing. So I think it's pretty easy to slot those things in. But I mean, obviously there's the fact that just a lot of the mechanics and a lot of the core stuff, like, there's nothing in D&D for disabled people or that reflects them, at least not on a large level. So I think it was mostly just a case of seeing where something wasn't, not necessarily that it needed to be fixed, but okay, if you're not going to do this and add these people, then we'll do it ourselves.
That's great.
Yeah, I think D&D historically seems to treat disability as, like, the only instances of it seem to be explicitly, like, status effects that are inflicted upon you.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to look at the actual experience of people who, like, actual disabled people.
And you can see it. I think, honestly, a lot of that inspired us came from the community. There's so much of the D&D and TTRPG community that's great, more and more we've realized as we've actually put stuff out, there is a side of it where you can definitely see that these people have not, I don't know, we get comments all the time, just totally unsolicited, out of nowhere, we'll post a tweet and it'll be like, well, I would never let one of my players, like, be in a wheelchair, and if they were, it would be a curse and they would have to heal it with magic. Like, whoa, dude, that is so uncalled for. It's, we just, we get so many people that just feel, especially DMs, that feel the need to tell us exactly why this is stupid and they wouldn't let players do it. I think that that is the... Anna and I always say we're just fueled by spite at this point. Like, because there's apparently so many tables where this is not welcome or where it is viewed as, well, why would you want to play a disabled character unless they had been cursed or it was a status effect? Well, you know, some people want to be able to see themselves in the things that they play and find that empowering. I don't know why you would... We get people who will tell us, you know, if I had a player in a wheelchair, they would just have to deal with the consequences because the villains would be targeting their chair and dungeons have stairs. My guy, you're in charge of that. Like, it is up to you to make a game that people want to play in. The villain doesn't have to target somebody's wheelchair. You could just not, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and last time I checked, if you wanted to be, like, a great sorcerer or cast loads of badass spells, it didn't ask you to have legs, like, working, functioning legs to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, hang on a minute, my dude. Like, that's got nothing to do with vocal, somatic, like, spell components. Yeah. Like, nothing.
Yeah, there's so much of... There is nothing stopping you except people who feel... People who really just end up calling themselves out with, you know, well, this wouldn't be welcome at my table. All right, so I wouldn't be welcome at your table, you know? If my autism mechanics are not going to be welcome at your table, then I, an autistic person, am not going to feel safe at your table because you obviously have a problem with me and the behaviors that I have, you know? It's just, it's very telling.
Yeah, it seemed, it's... I guess two things for me. One, even in regards to like combat for a wheel, for somebody in a wheelchair, I know they have the combat wheelchair item that somebody had made that has been passed around, but I'm reminded of, I don't know if either of you read the series Animorphs, but series, later in the series, when they go to add the auxiliary Animorphs, they, I remember Jake, the kind of the leader of the group, is talking to this dude who I think had suffered an injury during his life and is now in a wheelchair. And the guy has been in the wheelchair so long that he's able to just beat Jake up, literally using his wheelchair without ever getting up. He like rams into Jake and does all this stuff to completely throw his balance off. And it's like, that could be really interesting just to incorporate. Like, what it betrays to me, this is the second part of my point, is that when somebody has such a violently negative reaction to something like including disabilities in their game, that they have, it shows that they have a lot of preconceived notions about what that disabilities means. Are like and how people with disabilities must experience life. And it seems like they probably haven't spoken to that many disabled people. Because every time that I've spoken to a person, like to a disabled person, they seem to consistently be like, well, no, this is part of who I am. I don't feel the need to try and change it necessarily. I'm sure there are plenty of people who do, but that I think the overwhelming feel is that like, well, no, this is part of who I am. I don't need to be cured necessarily.
Yeah, because I watched this really fascinating series of documentaries about climate change, panicking inside. But they were led by a presenter named Ade, and he has, I think, multiple sclerosis, I think. And he was just literally traveling around the world in some of the most remote places in a wheelchair and crutches and making it work, my dude. And he, like, happy, totally fine, functioning, traveling, living a full life. It's just about, I think, okay, I mean, no, obviously I don't want to come off as ableist just because I'm trying to speak for people who are disabled, but just shift your perspective. Like, just shift it and listen to other people.
You could definitely tell people who either haven't interacted with disabled people or who will speak over disabled people, because those are the people who try to tell us what we can and can't do. You know, like, well, somebody who uses crutches because they have chronic pain and need the support couldn't be in a dungeon. Again, Anna, who started the program, my roommate, who I live with, I've known her for years. She has chronic pain. Sometimes she uses crutches. She can, A, use them so much better than I ever could. B is one of the most badass people I know. Like, people don't like to listen to disabled people, and they don't like to assume that we know our abilities and the things that we can do. People who say, you know, well, this person could never do this. Have you asked them? Have you asked that person? Because it looks to me like they're over there doing that thing. You just can't imagine doing that. But for us, it's our whole life. We've learned how to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of making it work, I think that brings us to some of the actual specifics of the things that y'all have created. I mean, speaking of chronic pain, I have the chronic pain mechanics right in front of me. And these are one of the things that I really like about all of these mechanics that you have created is that there's always a trade-off. So even if there might be some downsides, which with the chronic pain mechanics have a chronic pain chart where each day you roll a D10, and then depending on what number you roll, that determines how severe your pain is for that day and how exactly it affects you. But you automatically become proficient in constitution saving throws. You gain proficiency with medicine, and you have advantage in all concentration checks, which, especially for a spellcaster, is really good.
Right, yeah, we were very intentional, and we always try to be, when we sit down to figure out mechanics, that you want to avoid, there's this stereotype where, oh, this person is disabled, this person's mentally ill, but it's actually because they have superpowers. We don't want to do that, right? Because sometimes a disability is a disability. People are afraid of that word, too. Sometimes it's not superpowers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have chronic pain, you know? But also keeping in mind the fact that a lot of us are kind of experts at other things just because we have to be. So we do always make sure that there's some kind of trade-off that reflects what it's like, and we do a lot of us on the team have personal experience with various things. If it's something that more than one of us doesn't have experience with, we get people from our community to read it who do have experience with that to kind of reflect, well, here are the things that you're really good at that balance that out. Here are the things that are just a part of your life.
Yeah,
that's very important
like for anybody.
Yeah.
Like for anybody with any situation, it just makes 100% sense to me.
Yeah.
Because like any time that you have a situation where, okay, well, let's say for whatever reason, your family doesn't have a car and you don't have access to good public transportation. Well, you're probably going to get pretty good at either convincing people to give you rides or walking long distances.
Yeah.
So like you have that, obviously this is different from a disability, but it's what I'm trying to say is that the logic of, oh, well, this particular disadvantage, in order to survive and function, I then gain these advantages just by through the process of existing as myself.
Right, for sure. And we get people who get really upset about that too, you know, like, well, you're just giving them extra advantages because they're disabled.
No!
No! But also, I mean, that's how every single, like, if you have a certain class in D&D, you know, maybe if you wear heavy armor, you're less likely to get hit, but you're not going to be as stealthy. Every single D&D mechanic has some kind of trade-off. That's how it works. There are so many other mechanics in D&D that give you proficiencies or that give you these things. No, this is just balancing it out. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's perfectly logical because, like, my personal favorite are the ADHD mechanics. Shout out for possible late diagnosis, getting my test next week. Woohoo! Hey. In my 30s. Awesome. But, like, it makes perfect sense, especially the hyper-focusing function. I'm like, yes, I can play a rogue who can only hyper-focus and is completely dead to everything else but one task. I can do this one thing really well. Like, and it's just like, yes, that absolutely makes sense. I feel like that, like, reflects how sometimes I think my brain functions. And I'm like, oh, that's exciting to me because then I can dig into roleplay. There's nothing here that seems like I'm getting an advantage over anyone else. And if my DM is paying enough attention, we'll create tasks and challenges for the party and myself that, you know, challenge us. It's in the name.
Exactly. Again, I think it's very reflective on DMs, especially, who feel like they have to come yell at us like, okay, you clearly aren't, you don't care about creating a world and creating a story where people can have fun and do interesting things with their characters. I don't know. I do love the ADHD mechanics. One of our team members, Embers, she plays in a game that I DM, and her cleric, now with a couple of artificer levels, I love him. He uses our ADHD mechanics now since we've developed them, and I always think of it as very fun to kind of work with that and give him things that he can focus on and things that he can do for the party. That's fun. It's fun for me. It's fun for her, you know? It can be really fun. And it makes people happy. So what is the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just meeting your players where they're at.
Yeah.
Which is just a considerate thing to do as a dungeon master and as like a person who's trying to have fun with their friends.
Yeah. And I think just in general, like for the game as a whole, class yourself as disabled or whether that disability is visible or invisible, you can still just using these mechanics make characters that are just really even more layered and have a much more nuanced experience. So it's not taking away anything at all. It's just enriching it.
100%. Like, and I think what's really interesting about it is reading these as someone who does not have ADHD. It's like, it's interesting because I'm like, oh, wow, I had not personally thought of this particular part of like the experience that a person with ADHD might have. Like the idea that, oh yeah, they have advantage on hyper-focusing on this. They have like pluses to their passive perception when they're not hyper-focusing. Like of course, hyper-focusing has drawbacks to their passive perception because now they're just like blinders on this. The idea of like meditation being much more difficult and anything that takes like long-term concentration.
Yeah. Or whether you're interested in a task or not. Like it's like, oh, I'll finish this or not finish that. Or I really want to finish this.
And like even overstimulation and concentration, both of those aspects of the mechanics as well. Like all of these, and of course the impulse check.
I love that.
These are all really interesting.
I love the impulse check. I really love it because I can't control them. I see a cat and I scream. I can't help it. It comes up like a meaning.
That one comes up so often in the campaign that I DM, and it has always led to either really fun conversations. Combat or just really funny moments for the party. It's always been great. And that's, I think that the mechanics can be really helpful for DMs too. Because, like you said, if it's something that you haven't experienced, I think that that's a great way for maybe someone who's a DM who isn't experienced with that disability but does know how D&D mechanics to work to learn more about that. It gives you a way to make things more fun for your character, for your player. And also helps people learn, you know, in a way that makes sense to them. Like, oh, okay, so you have all of the... Yeah, I think it's very helpful. It helps everyone if you use it correctly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One thing that I really liked, jumping back to the NPCs that you created, the first one that I looked at was Yenfir Theridan, the Firbolg. And the thing that jumped out at me was he has chronic pain, but his chronic pain comes from his history as like his past as an adventurer, which I thought was like really interesting. Like he's been in a lot of fights and has suffered a lot of injuries and therefore because of that suffers from chronic pain. And I was like, well, you know what? That just makes a whole lot of sense. Like, I completely understand. I know some people are born with like conditions that cause them to suffer from chronic pain, but this dude, he's literally like his profession is what gave it to him.
Right. You know, like, I stole him from my campaign. He was an NPC in an arc I ran, and I came back to him because he was a favorite amongst my party. So I'm so glad that he's your favorite because they got so much fun out of just hanging out with him. So he's he's one of my favorites as well because he's one I've actually played.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, and I love that his quarterstaff, I love the quarterstaff doubling as like a mobility aid. That's really cool.
Right, again,
like this dude
yeah.
comes up like supporting himself with his staff, and you're like, ah, okay, well we can take this guy, and then he just wah, and just flips it out, starts whacking peeps.
Yeah, I think that comes back so to, cool. you know, we know how to deal with our disabilities and how to be proficient with them. We know how to use things for double purposes. We know how to have the stuff we need on hand, you know?
Yeah.
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 Well, like the painkiller mechanics, which, by the way, thank you for this, because I recently came to the realization that it makes no sense that there are no painkiller mechanics currently existing in Dungeons & Dragons. Like, the only thing that's pain-related that I can think of is the power word pain spell, which is like an 8th-level spell. I don't even
right.
know if people use it normally.
Yeah.
But, like, it makes sense to me that, like, in a world where there's a lot of magic going around, or any world, really, somebody would have made some kind of painkillers.
Yeah.
That could affect, and yeah, and you guys have, you have both light and heavy painkillers,
yeah.
I believe, which, yeah, and like each one has their own set of mechanics.
All that,
yeah.
All that, all those little blue pills.
Like House.
Yeah, like House.
Just like House.
Yeah, just yeah. like House. Although, like, that
if
man
you ever wanted to play House.
Lost his license so long ago. It is so improbable that he's still treating patients. He would have lost his medical license ages ago.
You know this dude has blackmail on, like, the whole hospital.
Yeah, where's
he, like, he knows. That's the only reason he's still
employed. Where's the show about the House medical industry crime empire that he's got going on?
Because he must.
He uses his powers of deduction just to be able to blackmail everyone around him into not taking away his medical license.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, I very much love the weighted blanket. That's a lovely magic item. I love it so much.
Yeah, that's one
great.
Of my favorite things is when we make all those little magic items that are just kind of fun. It's just a fun flavor. They also, you know, yeah. help with some of the mechanics, but
yeah.
it's just fun to do those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the message pebble. That, again, an item that makes so much sense to me. And, like, and it makes it makes sense in any context, not just in the context of disability, but, like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah. Like, okay, for example... Another example of what you could probably call a disability that is in the mechanics of Dungeons & Dragons are the Kenku people, like, as
right.
written, because Kenku aren't able to essentially speak on say anything that they haven't heard before.
Mm.
The message pebble could theoretically completely change all of that, because you don't need to actually speak. It's just your thoughts.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
like, in a world like that, you'd think that this would be a common thing for Kenku to have,
yeah.
potentially. And you mentioned that you had primarily worked on the autism mechanics.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So, like, what are, first of all, again, these are very, very cool. I like these a lot, but what are some of your, particular aspects of, like, the mechanics of the autism mechanics that you've worked on?
Right. So the message pebble was one of them because Anna and I were talking about, you know, like, well, when one of us is nonverbal, even if we're just sitting on the couch beside each other, we just text. There's no phones in D&D. You can't just do that. So then we toss it back and forth. And I was like, well, sending stones are a thing. What if you had kind of a smaller version of that? It's a pebble. So we talked about the nonverbal stuff a lot. A lot of the mechanics, honestly, for autism specifically, came out of a NPC I ran in the campaign. He's still around. But I began kind of running this main NPC for the party who was helping them out. In typical fashion, they ended up, you know, making him come along on all their adventures because you give a party a likable NPC and they adopt him. That's how it goes. He's actually married to one of the PCs now. It was a whole thing. But
I've been there.
Yeah, I started introducing him and then just privately I was like, oh, I think he's autistic. And this was as I was figuring this out about myself for the first time. And so I sort of just had him do his thing and would roll various, they had brought him on adventure and they were in an environment where it was really like loud or bright or something that I would have found overstimulating, I would just quietly roll a little like constitution saving throw for him that would just kind of inform, you know, how he then behaved so that maybe the party could pick up on that. And I was really surprised by, he became a favorite of the party, which surprised me a lot because I had put into him a lot of qualities that I didn't like about myself or that I thought were obnoxious about myself because of who I was as an autistic person. So it was a big wake up for me and I realized, oh, they really like this guy and they specifically really like the parts of him that I feel like I have to mask because they're not cool or they're not easy to deal with. So
yeah,
a lot
they draw
of
attention in a neurotypical world.
Exactly. Yeah, but they embraced so many of those qualities in him in a way that made me feel really good about eventually being openly autistic with them. And now I don't mask when I'm DMing that game, and I don't feel like I have to hide parts of myself. So a lot of those little things that I had done with him, we expanded upon for the autism mechanics, like the whole sensory overstimulation thing, which we then also used for the sensory processing disorder mechanics, which are separate, but those two things often go hand in hand, as with a lot of disability stuff. So it was a lot of things like that where I took little roles that I had already been making, and we just expanded on them a little bit more and made them a little bit more meaty.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, because some of these are so detailed and deep with how, like, it, one of the things that I like about it is, like, with autism, it can manifest so differently in different people. Like, I think what is the saying, if you've met an autistic person, you've met an autistic person.
Yes.
Like, you don't know all autistic people. Yeah. Every person's experience is going to be different, and different people are going to express different traits to different extents. And so, like there's different, you have multiple different aspects that can be emphasized depending on how exactly this particular character expresses their autism.
One of the things I'm very proud of with our mechanics is how we do a lot of making lots of different traits and lots of little pieces, and we try to emphasize you can work with the DM to pick the ones that are relevant for you and your character. There's a lot of customizing that you can do because, again, yeah, not all disabled people are the same. Everyone has their different little mix of traits, and so we try to give people lots of options and say, you know, you can pick and choose from the ones that work for you and the ones that reflect your character and leave out some of the others. It is totally up to people.
Yeah, and you even have, like, separate the stress point mechanics that tie in with this, and of course the items that tie in, and even with the chronic pain mechanics, I don't think we mentioned the joint braces that can help give you like a minus to your chronic pain rolls. Like it's a whole system. It's really, really cool. And like it's ready for a person to just take and slot into their game. Which actually brings me to my next question, because I don't think that I play with some people, I think, with various disabilities, but I've never actually, most of the players in my games are not disabled. And my question to you is, How do you feel about like non-disabled people playing disabled characters?
Right.
Like, how should they approach that?
I think people should go for it. I think that that would actually be great. I think the problem is when you bring it in as, this is my disabled character. And it has to be, you know, their whole arc revolves around they're in a wheelchair and they're sad about it. Which, obviously, mm-hmm. there's all kinds of complicated feelings that people can have about that. But I think the main problem is when people make it, you know, a curse or some kind of tragic backstory that they're just really bummed about all the time. And their whole thing is about fixing their disability. That's obviously not great. But I think one of the reasons these mechanics exist, one of the reasons we made them, is so people can understand them, is so people can see disabled people as people. I think if you want to play a character who is disabled, even if you yourself are not, if you're gonna be cool about it, you should just do it. Just play them as a person. The mechanics are there to kind of inform how that affects their life. That can be a really useful tool. I think that that'd be very helpful, because disabled people are people. We're just people. We all have our own little things, but we're just people. And so I actually think that it would be great if more non-disabled people just played us as people and treated us as people. I think that normalizing that is a great thing. So I would definitely love to encourage people to just go for it. If it's something you're interested in, just go for it. And if there's anything you're ever not sure about, you can ask a disabled person. You know, if there's something you're concerned about, talk to a disabled person. Or, our mechanics are there to support you in that and tell you what it's like. I think it's a great thing. If people are going at it with good intentions, even if you mess up, that's fine. You know, it's I think that it's a good thing.
It's about, like, the learning process, really.
Mm. Exactly.
It's, it's kind of the same thing that we say when we talk about, like, people playing a racial minority that they're not a member of. It's the exact same principle, that it's really about respect and, like, and not making the thing about this person that is different from you their defining feature.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a white person playing a black person, maybe don't call them Blackson. And, like, every single thing about them is just, really want to emphasize that this person is black.
Yeah.
I'm a white person playing a black character.
Yeah.
Just everybody, everybody clear. Like, it's the same principle. Mm. And don't lean into weird stereotypes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
100%. It's the same principle, just treating people with respect.
Yeah, and I think that, like, a lot of your work is so well considered and sort of beautifully built, in that if you just allow the roles to happen and take your time with it session by session, you are going to get a real feedback loop about the actual experience, despite you not necessarily having that experience, and learn how to continue to play it with a level of grace and integrity. Just purely by the roles and how the mechanics function, and feel that and whatever discomfort arises there, and navigate through that, because I think that's the beauty of these items, is that it gives you that tactile experience literally off the page mechanically. So just trust it.
For sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think if you're willing to learn and just see where the roles take you, that'll very quickly give you a sense of what it's like. Once you've failed a couple chronic pain roles and you see how that affects you, you're very quickly going to figure out how that affects people, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, gives you a lot more empathy for people.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what we want. Boo to bad DMs who don't want to bring more people into their games. Boo!
Boo.
A very friendly boo. A very friendly, lighthearted boo meant with love and light. I'm sorry. But a boo nonetheless.
I hope they learn.
A boo with flowers on top.
And honestly, I think it's, as you mentioned, it's great that D&D in general, and 5e in particular, is a game that encourages the players to create mechanics and add the things that they want to see in the game. But hopefully, Wizards kind of takes a cue from you at D&D Disability and other groups and other people who are creating things like this, that, like, some of this stuff should just be in the game. Like, there's no reason that some of these things can't be specific items or, you know, some aspects of the mechanics as well. Like, some of this stuff could easily fit in. And it would address the fact that currently D&D just kind of overlooks all of that. And as we said, kind of, or any disability that occurs in game is essentially just painted as a curse.
Right.
Usually explicitly a curse.
I think that it's definitely become more of a thing. I think there's a lot of awareness around it right now. I mean, we are not the only people who are doing super incredible work when it comes to that. You've got the combat wheelchair. There's so many other people who are making the game their own and representing themselves in it. It's a really big push right now. So I'm very hopeful that people like, you know, Wizards of the Coast will kind of pick up on that. That's a thing that's important to their players, to a lot of them, actually. I think a lot of people didn't even realize that it was a thing that was missing until they realized they could do it.
Yeah. 100%. I guess the next question that I wanted to ask is, like, what kinds of things do you have planned for the future? Can you share with us any ideas that are any things that you all have been working on that you might be bringing out?
Yeah.
Like other mechanics or items or anything like that?
Yeah, we actually have a pretty big, exciting one that is coming out on the 28th. We're making a little zine booklet. It's called A Guide to Service Mimics. And we have gone with the idea of, what if you could use mimics for cute, fun, good things? What if they could be kind of helpful? So we have a whole book that is full of mimics as basically support animals or as disability aids, which I think is very fun. So it's just a whole book of these little statted out helpers. There's a wheelchair mimic. There's one that functions as a back brace and can sort of adjust and provide support to the wearer. There are some that can, you know, warn people to back off for people who have sensory issues or don't want people to come up and touch them. So we're coming up with a whole zine of fun, cute little mimics. We have a great artist. They're so cute. So it's just a cute little book full of cute little art of mimics being your friend. And that's May 28th is when that is coming out. We're writing it and having sensitivity readers look at it right now. So that's definitely the one we're very excited about. That's going to be like a little print zine and everything. It's going to look great.
I'm going to get one.
Will people be able to get that on your website?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be on our website, which is just dnddisability.com. We are putting stuff about it on our Twitter, which is, it's all the same handle. It's all just at dnddisability. We have little sneak peeks on our Twitter. If people want to support us, we've been posting little excerpts from it on our Patreon that people can look at. I think we just posted like part of the introduction on there. So yeah, people can find stuff about that pretty much anywhere they can find us. We're hyping it up. So we're very excited.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, even as you were saying that, I was like, oh yeah, support creatures in D&D. It's like we already have like a Beastmaster Ranger. They have a sidekick mechanic. Like all of this stuff could so easily be slotted in there.
Yeah.
My
personal favorite is there's a seeing eye mimic. And the design for it is just covered in little eyes. It's so fun.
That is awesome. I love that. That's exciting. And I also saw that on your website you have, it looks like they were created by the community. You have the Oath of Accessibility, which is, I guess, a paladin subclass, and different things and chronic migraine mechanics. You've been like working with different groups to create additional mechanics. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We have been trying to highlight, again, other things that people have been doing that, you know, we didn't have any hand in. They were just cool things that other people did, but we want to uplift those because we're all in it together. So things like the chronic migraine mechanics and the Oath of Accessibility, we didn't have anything to do with making those, We just found them, or the people reached out to us, and we were like, oh, that's really cool. We want people to be able to see those. So we are also trying to incorporate community works. The Oath of Accessibility, which is a Paladin Oath, was very cool. The creator of that works with a children's hospital in the UK. And so we made stickers for the Oath of Accessibility. We got an artist to do stickers. And all of the proceeds we made from those stickers, we were able to donate to the children's hospital where they run TTRPG programs for kids. So we've been able to do super cool stuff like that just by, it's so important to support other people. You know, it's not a competition of who can do the cool thing first. We're all in it together. We're all trying to see ourselves represented. We want to be very intentional about lifting up those people so that everyone can see the cool things they're doing.
Yeah, this is so exciting. All this stuff is so cool. And I can tell you that a lot of our fans on our Discord have been like clamoring for ways to represent various disabilities in game. So they're going to love these mechanics that you all have worked on. This is so cool.
And my heart is so cool. Oh, yeah, we want people to use them. We want to hear about people using them. I get to run a game and watch my players use some of them, which is super fun. I love it. We always want to hear about people using them. It makes us very happy. We will talk about it in our Discord. We'll have a great time with it.
Yeah.
I want to also just encourage anyone who has not checked out D&D Disabilities website. This stuff is really cool. Like, you all thought of, like, reading this, I'm like, man, they thought of everything. Like, reading the different things, I'm like, this is awesome. And then, and what I like about it as well is that, like, there's different ways to apply it in the game. You can apply it to NPCs, you can apply it in different, it's awesome.
It's really cool. Like, the second I opened it up, I was just in. I was like, what? Where has this been? My whole life. Jeremy, to be fair, has been shouting at me for weeks to look at it, but where has it been?
Thank you so much for being with us, Amy. We always ask our guests this is one of my favorite parts of every interview because these are always really interesting. A tale from the table. This could be a fun, crazy, chaotic, dramatic story that's happened to in game to you or somebody else at the table. Could also be heartwarming. That should be on the list because we've had at least one heartwarming one. But anything, any chaotic, crazy, interesting, fascinating, shocking tale that you can give us.
Yeah, so I actually do have one. I think it's crazy and heartwarming, so there you go. But it also has to do with the autistic NPC that I put in my campaign, because this campaign's been going on for almost 2 years. It's been a really long time, but they're all very high level now. But they had been befriending this NPC for a long time, and one of their main enemies in the campaign is the Fae Queen, because I love my Fae lore. And the thing that kind of spiced it up was that one of my PCs, she was a warlock, and she wanted a fae patron. And I remember when I was putting together campaign stuff and she told me that, I was like, this is perfect. I already have a perfect fae patron for you. So there had been lots of drama about she was kind of trapped into being a warlock for the fae queen that they were trying to destroy. So they'd been spending this whole little story arc trying to figure out how to get her out of that. During this time, she had also started dating my autistic NPC. They're very cute. I love them. It was such a pleasant surprise. Sometimes players try to romance things and you're like, oh, I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. This was great. They're very cute. It's perfect. But they had been together for a while and it kind of came down to this big climactic battle, and being the devious DM that I am, I started pulling out, well, you're a fae warlock. You're trying to fight the fae queen's minions right now. She doesn't really want you to do that. So I was kind of having her fight the party a little bit. And it was very dramatic. And they concocted a plan that I did not see coming, which entailed the way that she had gotten trapped into being a fae warlock was by accidentally giving the fae queen her name. So what she did was, she proposed to this NPC and they got married and she changed her name. And they were like, if I change my name, my true name's different now. Does that break it? And I thought about it, and I was like, I guess that is such a wild thing that I would not in any way have thought of. Yes.
Whoa.
I was just desperately trying to figure out what they were going to do to try to break this warlock pact. And it was get married and change your name.
That's awesome.
I thought it was so fun. There was no way I wasn't going to let that happen. It was just, I had not thought of it. I was going to make them go on a whole quest to get her name back, personally. But I had not thought about
Much simpler.
It was a really fun, like, roleplay way to do it. It made sense for the characters. That's one of my favorite things that's ever happened in the game I've run, because I just remember sitting there, and it's, you know, that session went long, because it was a big climactic battle. So it was, like, 11:30 at night, and they're like, hey, Amy, what if we did this? And, you know, my brain is exploding. It made me happy. Everybody was so hype. They got one of the clerics in the party to, like, marry them real fast. They had a full-on Pirates of the Caribbean, like, battle wedding. It was the coolest thing that's ever happened.
That's so cool.
I just remember that as something that I was so pleasantly surprised because I hadn't thought about it, but it was really, really cool when they said it. And then everybody in the party was really hyped. It was a good night. That's one of my favorite stories.
Oh, I love that. So did they end up defeating the Fae Queen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they... Yeah. Yes. Not in a way that I anticipated. But sometimes that's better, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yay! I was very proud of them.
Oh, man. So did the warlock remain a warlock? Or did they end up, like... What happens once they've changed their name and they're no longer... being controlled by their patron.
Yeah, so after that session, I went and I talked with that player because I gave her several solutions. She had taken a couple fire levels at that point. She had multiclassed a little bit. So I told her, you know, I'm not going to punish you for doing a cool thing by being like, well, now you're just a level 3 fighter in this level 10 party. So I offered to let her kind of switch over to fully fighter, or it worked out conveniently. There was another very, very powerful person that they were working with, and... So I offered her the opportunity to still be a warlock, but switch all of her stuff over. So we switched her warlock pact a little bit and just took away her fae-specific abilities, and I gave her some cool new ones. So it worked out. There was another warlock patron ready for her, but it turned out pretty well. Yeah, I did not want to punish her for doing a cool thing.
How dare you do this cool thing?
Yeah. That's so cute.
Oh, man. That was a great story. Yeah. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, I guess for the people, tell them, you've already mentioned it once, but just to remind everybody, where can they find you in D&D Disability?
Yeah, D&D Disability is... dnddisability.com. We're at dnddisability on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. That's probably the easiest way to find us. You can find me on there. You can find Anna on there. You can find everybody else on our team. All of our social stuff is linked on the website. That's the best way to sort of find everything all at once. It's all on our website.
Woohoo! Yay!
Awesome. I guess I have to throw in a plug for our show at the end of here, specifically for the Patreon, because I think we always plug this. Am I correct? Oh, do we plug this?
Yes, we do. I feel like we're a little bit at sea without Jasper. Yes, we do.
Well, the thing is, it's normally Jasper who does this, and I zone out through this.
Me too. Because
at one point it was me. At one point it was me who used to jump in and be like, oh, but we should also on Patreon. And wait a minute, correct me if I'm wrong, but D&D Disability is also on Patreon. Yes?
Yes.
No?
Yes. We are.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so first of all, go to Patreon. What is it, just D&D Disability on Patreon?
It is, yes. Important to note, it is not like you have to be part of our Patreon to get our stuff. All of our mechanics are free. The Patreon is mostly just for people who want to support us. Sometimes we post... early sneak peeks of mechanics we're releasing, but it is just if you want to support us, that's cool. All of our stuff is free for people who want to use it.
Awesome.
Mm. Yeah. okay, well, go to Patreon, sign up to become a patron for D&D Disability, and then, you know, while you're at it, if you got a little bit of extra cash lying around, you can head over to patreon.com/tbhalflings and maybe become one of our patrons. You get additional bonus episodes, you get Wagadu Watches, where we talk about the episode that, or the various episodes, we kind of decompress after the episodes of our actual play show, The Cub and the Caterpillar.
Yeah.
You get, what else do you get?
You
There's
get
other
to
things
vote
on there.
On stuff that we do.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
one
you get to
shot,
vote on stuff.
All sorts
you can,
of fun things.
You can become an N, you can help create an NPC that will appear in a future session of The Cub and the Caterpillar, or future episode, that is. All kinds of cool stuff that can happen on there. But I would tell you where to find the podcast, but if you're listening to this, you hopefully already have. However, we are on Twitter as well, at TB Halflings, on basically all of the social medias. Thank you so much for listening. Wow. This has been... I can't wait to actually implement some of this stuff.
Yeah,
in some
yeah.
of my games.
Mind completely blown. I'm like thinking right now, oh, I've got a warlock who needs some pain management coming her way pretty soon.
Do it.
I'm like, whoa. Ellie, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry.
Thank you to Amy for being with us. This has been an absolute blast. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you all next time. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk. Meow. Yeah.
Yay. Yay.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.